The information presented in this podcast is not intended for the treatment or prevention of disease or any medical condition, nor is a substitute for medical advice. The information contained herein in this podcast reflects only the opinion of the author and presenter and is in no way considered required practice.
Welcome to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connects your brain to your brawn.
Hi, this is Eric Fiorello, and I want to welcome you to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. Today is August 5th, 2014, and Motivation and Muscle is sponsored by Fiorello Barbell Company here in upstate New York, where we're not the biggest, but we're the best. And our motto is, we don't try, we succeed. And today is Tuesday, and our usual guest every Tuesday is none other than our good friend, Roger LaPointe, president of Atomic Athletic. Roger's been around for quite a while. I've known him since his days at York, and we've pretty much stayed in touch and done business for at least 20 years. So today's show, we're going to talk about rediscovering dumbbells. We're going to get into partialing. We're going to get to the rediscovery of an object we feel not only that's beneficial, but it's kind of been replaced by the kettlebell in a lot of ways. So we're going to really get into this subject today. We're going to talk a little bit about ligament and tendon strength, obviously, with this. If you listened to Roger and my show last week, we really got into tendon and ligament strength, especially in the power rack, pushing through with your isometric holds, et cetera, et cetera. I would tell you to go back to that show and rediscover it, and I'm hoping down the road we're going to do even a part two on that, because I think there's a lot more we can get out of both of us. So, Raj, that was a long-winded one, but I think I had to hit on all that stuff before we get started. So welcome to Tuesday's show.
Thank you, Eric. Glad to be here.
Well, I'm glad you're here. Raj, why don't you just give a short thing, because I want to really get into this dumbbell stuff, because I like you, am a big proponent of it, and especially overhead. Tell everybody out here in Motivation and Muscle Land who's not, let's say they've never heard of you, which I'd be surprised, but let's just say for the sake of it, tell everybody a little bit about you, a little bit about the company, and then we'll just jet right into the dumbbell stuff.
Yeah, sure thing, Eric. I got into the broad term fitness industry in the mid-90s, and I was hired by the York Barbell Company as their Olympic lifting advisor and export sales manager, which combined two different things that a lot of people might not think were related, but at the time they certainly were. Olympic lifting was, for all intents and purposes, from a business perspective, dead in this country in the mid-90s. That was not the case for the rest of the world. In fact, Olympic lifting was the sport outside the United States. You know, even in one of our closest neighbors, Canada, the province of Quebec had, I think, 6,500 registered Olympic lifters and a population of maybe 7 million. So the United States at that time had only 1,500 registered Olympic lifters, and that included masters and Olympic officials that, you know, couldn't even lift anymore. Guys like Rudy Sablo, who was in his 90s. Rudy was a major figure. He was part of the Olympic committee, and he was one of the weightlifting judges that you would see at the Olympics. So you'd have your judges platform there, and Rudy was right there. He was the guy that I called up anytime I had a technical question. He'd been known his whole life as the guy who got it right. Mm-hmm. But he couldn't lift anymore. He was in his 90s. And in good shape, still exercised, but, you know, certainly wasn't going to the Olympics as an athlete at that
age. No, he's well past his prime.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I think when I was there, there were less than 600 senior age lifters. That would be the age group between juniors and masters, so essentially the competitive age. And, you know, you had the occasional junior that would be a real standout. You'd have the occasional master that was still up there. But, you know, so you've got one-tenth the number of athletes in the United States in Olympic lifting compared to the province of Quebec.
Right.
Well, you know, strongman was so big in Quebec that they had the equivalent of like county-wide contests that would be on television. I did voiceover color commentary for one here in 2006, I think, that made it onto Northwest Ohio television. And that was a big deal. Well, you know, we're talking 10 years later to get that. So things were very different then. You know, I had coaches laughing at my title because nobody would ever do variations on a snatch or a clean or a jerk in a serious collegiate strength training facility. That's dangerous. You know, it was all about the machines back then.
Yep.
And fortunately, my boss at York recognized this. At the time, they got recertified for having a barbell in the Olympics and really pushed that kind of thing. And honestly, they would – I think they should still be going in that direction. But, you know, there were a series of buyouts and all that sort of thing, which
sure.
actually allowed me to start Atomic Athletic. And I worked for a couple of other companies in there before starting Atomic Athletic, but I've been doing this for 15 years now. And I can do full what I call military strength training facilities where you do the strength and I can do the martial arts end of it, you know, boxing mm-hmm. heavy bags,
yep.
All that kind of stuff. So I'm known for the commercial fitness, but over the years I've really become known for the serious strongman type end of things. That's mm-hmm. where, you know, last weekend we had the Detroit Highland Games, and
right.
Once again they used our farmers walk units for it. The Detroit Highland Games are the oldest Highland Games outside of Scotland. They've been doing them since 1848 in Detroit. Donald Dinney competed in Detroit.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's
killer.
Now, Eric, did you see the Dinney Stones? Or
no, not when I was there. I mean, that next year is going to be a possibility of going right from Iceland to Scotland. I want to get the Inver too, Roger. You know, I mean, what I want to do is do the Inver and go, you know, the Dinney Castle and pull stones. The nice thing was I got a few years back before he stopped making a lot of equipment. David Horn had the original. He did the exact replica of the rings that are, you know, chained, and then they cement them or whatever they do into the Dinney stones, and I was able to get a pair of those, so I've got the authentic ones where I can train on. You know, and that was thing. And you know what else I want to mention, when you said your farmer's walk handles, I've got a set of yours. I don't know if yours look the same, but obviously the handle is a little oversized. Mm-hmm. You can load them with shot and plate them. I've had those probably 10 years. You can't hurt them. I mean, they've been dropped, they've been thrown, they've been they have not been treated real well at times. And yeah, but yes, those things are killer implements for farmer's walk. I like to deadlift them too. They're real nice to do just deadlifts with. And I also, getting back to Scotland, next year, that's what we're going to do.
Awesome.
Hopefully, yeah. I mean, that would be a hell of a voyage, you know. But the biggest thing for me right now, we got to get the Husafell stone done. But okay, so obviously you've had Atomic now for what, 15 years?
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to believe. I mean, let's face it. You've got a lot of knowledge. You've been in the sport for a long time. It's your niche. You definitely love it because when you talk, it comes through. But I know you got a big pet peeve right now.
Yes.
And
I do.
And okay. And we know it's about you're not. You've got some issues with kettlebells, obviously, which I've got a few, but I don't think they're the end all. Like they're and you know, this is marketing too. Pavel was the big guy with it, but we want to talk about rediscovering dumbbells. So why don't you let's start first off with, what is it about kettlebells that you take issue with, and why do you feel right now, especially right now, why should people, whether they're novice and got to learn how to do them, or a guy like me or someone even higher than both of us, should get back into dumbbells as far as pressing wise? Let's go with first.
That's actually a really great way to go.
Okay.
And let me first say, I like doing some things with kettlebells, and I grew up with kettlebells. Mm-hmm. You know, the kettlebell handles were part of the Milo triplex set that I grew up using as a kid. Okay. And, you know, we talked about that in another show. But so this is not something that I'm saying, oh, kettlebells are bad, don't use them.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm against is people who say all you need to do is kettlebells. Because the kettlebell, 10, 12 years ago, you couldn't get a kettlebell. It's, you know, the first kettlebell handle that I had made was for Kim Wood. Okay. He asked, you know, he says, oh, you've got a custom guy who can do kettlebell. You know, I said, yeah, this is my design. It's a kettlebell handle, and I've designed it for Olympic plates, and you can lift, you know, if you do buy one of our stone balls, it's got a hole drilled through it. You can put this in it, and it was a neat, clever design. So I'm not against kettlebells. What I'm against is using the wrong tool for the job.
Mm-hmm.
And kettlebells are actually the perfect tool for certain lifts. The problem that I see is twofold. One, most of those lifts that they're perfect for take some real education.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, people are going to get hurt.
Yep.
And, you know, I'm specifically talking about things like the one-hand snatch with a kettlebell. Mm-hmm. You know, as much as I like selling the leather forearm gauntlets that we have.
Yeah, I got to say.
Yeah, they're great. They're useful. I cringe every time somebody buys a set because they're smashing up their forearms doing one-hand kettlebell snatches. And it drives me up a wall when, I you know, I hear the tone in their voice. They're trying to do the right thing, but and they know they're hurting themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't know what's wrong with their technique. They think they're doing it right, and all they need is this leather forearm gauntlet to solve the problem. Well, it's not going to solve the problem, and odds are if they need the leather forearm gauntlet to fix their technique,
mm-hmm.
they're probably, and God knows what they're doing. We could have a whole show just on bad techniques out there and stupid things that people have done with weights. And over the years, I've kind of got this collection of dumb weightlifting stories, okay?
Yeah.
It'd be a funny show. But that being said, I've found over the years I can't tell them that they're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to listen. And odds are they're destroying their shoulder.
Sure.
Not to mention their forearm, which is full of all kinds of muscles, ligaments, tendons, and neuromuscular attachments, you know, because of your fingers.
Yeah.
It's, you know, so it takes some education to do the lifts the right way. And I'm all for education. It's, you know, I love reading about this stuff. It's, you know, at home for fun, I read things from, you know, I was talking with my wife about a book that I've got that came out in the 1820s in England. That's, you know, this is fun for me. So, you know, you can call me a strength training strongman nerd or something.
Mm-hmm.
Some people get into baseball statistics. I get into weightlifter, sort of in the broad sense, statistics. You know, here's one that a little bit a dumbbell statistic comes out of the Super Athletes, which I recommend everybody get a copy. It's, you know, David Willoughby published it. And what's it?
Do you have that on your site, Roger?
No, it's out of print.
Oh, it's out of print.
Oh, God, yeah. It's been out. There's one run of these done. And it came out in 1970.
Wow.
So, you know, like I've got a copy in the showroom, and anytime I can pick them up for sale, I do. But, you know, depending on, you know, the condition and so on and so forth, you know, they can be fairly expensive. This one's not in great shape. It's definitely a working copy. I think the price on it's $30, but it, you know, here's a statistic: George Hackenschmidt, 210 pound body weight, 68.7 inches tall, world famous Russian strongman and wrestler, held out dumbbells of 90 1/4 pounds in the right hand and 89 1/8 pounds in the left hand simultaneously.
Nasty.
St. Petersburg, February 15th, 1902. It says, this lift, in comparison to the performances of the French professional strongman, Victorious, was, in Hackenschmidt's own words, quote, in a less strictly correct style, unquote. From the fact that Hack's best two-hands military press was about 250 pounds, he would be expected to have been capable of a correct crucifix with about 75 pounds in each hand, which is a really interesting number because the 90 and 89 pounds are very close but greater than to what Szymanski was able to do with dumbbells.
Yep.
Now, that's a holdout, which, you know, you kind of have to see a picture of it to see what it is. It's kind of like a crucifix.
Well, Doug Hepburn used to do some big stuff like that, too. I've seen pictures of him crucifixing huge dumbbells.
Well, and as a matter of fact, the fifth guy in the list is Doug Hepburn.
There we go. See, I know something, man.
Absolutely. So 69 inches tall, but 260 pounds of Canada, held out correctly on his right hand, a dumbbell weighing 102 1/2 pounds.
God.
He maintained himself in an erect position by holding onto a tree with his left hand in Vancouver, British Columbia, April 29, 1951. Since Hepburn, at the latter date, had not attained his full strength, it would seem that when he did in 1954 through 56, he could probably have performed a crucifix with about 112 pounds in each hand.
Wow.
So Willoughby has an interesting book here in that Willoughby has all kinds of formulas for what different people should have been able to do in different lifts based on these formulas and the other lifts that they did, which is a fascinating concept. And it, you know, literally God only knows who, you know, what they could have done because they didn't actually do it. But he gets into that kind of thing, which,
yeah, I mean, technical for a very early era. I mean, you know, that's what I always liked about a lot of the old time stuff is, you know, people would be like, where did they even come up with this? Well, you know something, they came up, this is not what I'm a big believer in. You know my feeling about, and you've known me long enough where, you know, I've designed equipment, I've been alone, I've had to kind of rely on a lot of things, because if you don't, you can get killed in this sport real easy. These guys subscribe to what I do, you do, and a lot of people do that you don't really think about much, but you design, you incorporate, you build right in your own backyard. And when you're doing stuff, you're doing, to me, it's real world activity. It's like the guy that, you know, has lost a ton of weight. Maybe it doesn't show so much on the scale, but he can take now his belt and pull it to the last loop. It's just like, you know, okay, I want to pull a Thomas Inch 176-pound globe, solid. It's got a 2 3/4-inch handle per se. How do I do this? How do I start training to get this monster overhead, let alone, you know, obviously we're going to use two hands to clean it and get it to the shoulder, but most people can't even clean a beast like that with two hands. So when you read things like this to me, Roger, it hits a nerve in me where the simplicity of these gentlemen, number one, and number two, what better way to teach and learn other than do it right in your own backyard?
But yeah, and, it, you know, the building of dumbbells is an interesting topic that I've really gotten into since, it's almost 2.5 years ago. I competed in an all-around contest at the Ambridge VFW Hall, which if any of the listeners ever get a chance to even pull in a workout at the Ambridge VFW Hall, which is in Pennsylvania, it's in the mountains, it's like kind of middle of nowhere, but it's closer to Pittsburgh. This place has been a gym since, I think, the 1930s.
Wow.
Yeah. In fact, and this is kind of a funny thing. It gets into, yeah, be a little bit of a strength nerd before you go to a contest. Do your research because on one of the lifts that was a competition lift for this all-around association meet, I really didn't know how to do the dumbbell swing. And what I based it off of was the rule book, which is strictly rules, which is more of a you can't do this versus this is how you do it and how you train for it. So it was based on the rule book and some still photos. And my experience working with Vic Boff, more with kettlebells.
Right.
Okay. And Vic was a Coney Island strongman in the 1930s. Part of his act was two-man kettlebell juggling with the same Milo triplex type kettlebells that I grew up with.
Sure.
They would do two at once, back and forth, weighing about 40 pounds apiece. And Vic was a little guy. He's like my size. You know, I'm 5'3½", and generally weigh between 160 and 165. So, and that's where Vic was. So he was my mentor and taught me some ways of doing these things. So I applied that technique to this dumbbell lift. Well, like many of the all-round meets that I've been to, I try to pick the brains of the guys who are there because most of them are real strength nerds that have been in this for a long time. And many of them are older guys. Older meaning, gosh, I think Art Montini is in his early 80s.
He'd be in his 80s, right? Yeah, definitely.
You know, John McCain did an article on him in the early 70s calling him the old man of the gym.
Well, he did a great article when he wrote for Hard Gainer. He used to show Al quite a bit. I mean, a guy doing one—he was doing one-handed deadlifts with over 300 pounds. I mean, come on.
Oh,
you know,
Art's
unreal.
He is unreal, and he is sort of the one of the guys where I say, I want to be like that guy when I'm age. Some of the lifts that he does.
Yep.
I want to be like him today.
Mm-hmm. You know? No, it's incredible to think a guy that's been around that long, he's in his 80s. Most of these people are long dead and gone. You know, I mean, you know, not getting off topic, but here's the thing. Can't stress this enough. And I hope, well, I'm not even going to hope, we're going to, with this podcasting show and everything else associated with you and I, and Fiorello Barba, we're going to get this message out, Raj. And it's not been out. And there's one message I want to put forth to everybody. Learn how to lift weights. Seriously. Don't let people tell you, oh, they're bad for you. They make you muscle bound. You get stupid, you know, all that stuff. I'm telling you right now, if you buy into lifting weights, lifting weights can be better than anything else. I don't care if they tell you kettlebells, walking, whatever you want to call it. If you know how to properly lift weights, they can be the best endurance piece you ever had, your best strength piece, your best muscular piece. So, you know, what we're doing here today, I mean, obviously with the dumbbell show we're doing here, if anything, I can't speak for Roger, but I can pretty much figure he would agree with this. Let's get that subject out there. Let's get you people into the weights. You know, if you need help, you know, Roger and I would gladly help you. So go ahead, Rod, just keep rolling along. But I just thought that was so important. It's not out there, man.
No, and when I was at the Highland Games last weekend, one of the amateur guys who has competed now at Detroit as an amateur, and the amateur guys at Detroit, they have to be invited. You have to be up to a certain level to even be able to compete as an amateur in Detroit in the morning. So one of the guys that I guess he's now set a record for number of times to compete at Detroit. I think they said 21 years in a row he's competed.
Unreal.
Yeah. Well, he came up to me, and I wish I could remember his name. It'll come to me. But the guy's not one of these sort of fat guys, if you know what I mean.
See
him. He's just a large-framed individual that knows how to throw. He came up to me and he says, you know, I really have to thank you for pushing this whole body physical culture concept for individuals. And I said, well, thanks, but where are you coming from with this? And he says, well, for my throwing, I do some basic weightlifting. Yep. I practice my throws, and I'm a farmer.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay, well, what kind of farming do you do? He says, well, for my main endurance fitness kind of stuff that I do, I bale hay. And I throw 75-pound bales of hay and lift them, you know, thousands of them a year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I do. And what you are doing is the best thing out there that people can do. And it gets very little attention because, one, the average person wants a quick solution. They want to take a magic pill.
Mm-hmm.
And two, the telling people to change their lives as a physical culture concept is not popular.
No.
You know, businesses look at that and they say, oh my God, we don't want to tell people what to actually do. We just want to sell them an object.
Yeah.
And he says, you've got stuff to buy here. You've got tons of information stuff to that people can buy. And that pays the bills. But the underlying message is that physical culture concept. And I was like, wow, thanks. I didn't even realize that most of you guys caught on to that. And he says, oh, yeah, everybody here knows it. You're the real deal. That's pretty cool.
That's a nice compliment. But, anybody that knows Anthony, it's not the quick fix. It's the everlasting. I mean,
right.
Look, to be good at anything is a lifetime. And you and I both know we can know whatever we know right now. And obviously you and I are always experimenting or reading or exploring. But you know something? You and I are never going to know everything, and nobody is. But you know what the whole thing is here? It's like you hit upon a big word, education. Mm-hmm. And, the ones that we got to go after at this point are going to be the young ones. Mm-hmm. I mean, hopefully with what I'm getting into now with the Wait is Over Fast DVD coming out near the end of this month is this. My goal is 1 million people, and I don't say that lightly. And if we can take people from even 35 years old to 100 and just change their thinking around a little bit about fitness and get them involved, and, you know, more than anything I see here with weight loss or anything, let's just get your parts working again and worry about the other stuff down the road. See,
that is so accurate.
Yeah.
In fact, I looked up some statistics for today's thing based on that because I knew I was going to talk about the one-hand dumbbell swing a little bit.
Sure.
And, when I was younger, before you go through cycles and trying to learn this stuff. And there was one meet where I tried dropping weight and, like wrestlers do. I had a buddy who was a collegiate wrestler, and we did it right, supposedly, where I was still super strong and – I think for that meet, I lost 11 pounds in 10 days, which is huge, especially when
it's monster.
Yeah, when you're competing as, what I was, 154, 152, the weight class has changed at one point. 11 pounds is a big percentage of your body weight.
Yes, it is.
Here are some facts, okay? And after that meet, I never dieted down more than – 1 pound or something just to make weight because I try to keep my body weight about the same.
Yeah.
Here's the thing about dehydration, because largely that's what I did to myself. And while I was strong in things like a squat or a deadlift, my neurons were not firing correctly.
Right.
So I missed lifts based on technique issues. And
because
I was all over the place. I felt really strong.
Yep.
But
you had that, no connection.
Right. And I was slow. So here we go. A dehydration effect. People can find this on the Human Kinetics website. Dehydration and its effects on performance is the name of the article. Okay. And it's a longer article that has lots of citations, and some of them are a little off from the others because the testing that they did was done different ways. But you'll get the idea here. For fatigue with loss of exercise performance, which is impaired if you're dehydrated, that's just a basic fact, as little as 2% of body weight through dehydration, weight loss.
Yeah. Yep.
Now, I did a figure. If you're a 120-pound runner, so let's say you're in high school, you're a lightweight runner, You weigh 120 pounds, and this would apply to a lot of women, a lot of distance guys, a lot of younger guys. That's only 3 pounds of your body weight, right? Yep. There. Actually, that's less than 3 pounds of your body weight. Okay, so during a normal day, just not even doing exercise, people can lose that. If it's warm out.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. So you are impaired with 2% loss. With a 5% loss of body weight, this is like, let's say you've done a heavy workout outdoors,
yep,
or maybe
yep,
you're, I did roofing two summers in college. I lost 5% on a regular basis.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
They found it can decrease your capacity for work by 30% or more.
That's a lot.
That's huge. So in sprint athletes doing high capacity limit work, they found a 2.5% of body weight loss resulted in a 45% reduction in performance.
Mm-hmm.
45% reduction in performance. Now, we're talking about high-capacity sprint athletes working at their maximum. So
yeah,
in the previous study, they studied 35-year-olds, I believe it was, just doing some basic movements like studying VO2 max on a
mm-hmm,
stationary bike, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you get to athletes, that reduction goes up dramatically because you're doing limit stuff. So what you're doing is that water loss
mm-hmm,
is impairing the effect of three basic electrolytes, your magnesium, potassium, and sodium.
Yep.
And
yep,
in a worst case scenario, it can turn into severe muscle contractions that we call cramping, which
yep,
in the worst case scenario, you can actually pull muscles from the cramping itself. And
why do you think you see all these NFL guys pulling hamstrings?
It's horrendous.
Totally.
So, I was talking to David Shaw, the power
yep,
lifter, the other day. His longtime customer of mine is doing an article on garage gym equipment, homemade equipment
mm-hmm,
for me right now. And the big thing that guys were doing to make weight in powerlifting circles, even getting down to the 275-pound class, which is where he was at, and he might lose a pound or two, but generally kept the same body weight. He wanted
mm-hmm,
to know what he was going to lift going into the meet and plan for a little bit of adrenaline help, and that's it. There were guys competing against him who might lose as much as 25 pounds.
That's deadly, man.
Yeah, and they would be using Lasix to do it.
Yeah.
And then because of the rules in powerlifting at the time, they would weigh in 24 hours beforehand, and then
yep,
they would actually compete in the 275-pound class at around 300 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
So their philosophy was, I'm losing this weight and it's going to come right back, but it doesn't. It really doesn't. And if you look at something like Olympic lifting or sprinting or any of the track and field explosive events, the Highland Games, your electrolytes are completely thrown off. And
yep,
that's a bad thing. Weight loss over a longer period of time that's sport-related and a lifestyle change, it's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for certain things, you're going to lose some performance with the body weight loss. And the Highland Games from last weekend, every year I have this discussion with somebody. there'll be an amateur guy saying, Rod, you're an Olympic lifter. You do this, that, your grip's mm-hmm. great, all that sort of thing. You should compete as an amateur in the Highland Games. And I say,
right.
No, I'm not big enough. And they say, yeah, but, you know, you do all this explosive lifting. You could do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so back in, I think it was 96 or 97, Steve Pulcinella it convinced me to try a workout with him in his practice field.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to flip his practice caber, and which was a shorter one. You know, he was doing it for reps
yep.
and that kind of thing.
Yep.
I was able to do a pretty good weight for height, not the spinning
yeah.
type, but the one where I'm pushing against gravity. Any of the spinning events were worthless for me,
yep.
especially the heavier it got. What happens mm-hmm. is when you do the spinning, you've got to have a counterweight to the weight that's spinning. And so at the time, I would compete in Olympic lifting at about 154 pounds, right?
Yep.
Well, a 56-pound weight is more than a third of my body weight. So
right.
just as I was starting to get any kind of momentum going, it
mm-hmm.
spun me.
Hmm.
And it became the center of gravity, and I started moving around it. So, you know, in an event like that, you need some body weight.
Yeah.
But
well, that's essential for everything. But when that,
as a
you know,
percentage of body weight, though, I found with my explosive lifts,
yep.
while I'll lose what I call slow strength, my explosiveness actually goes up. So because I'm in a weight class, I'm not a super heavy
mm-hmm.
in an unlimited class. For me, there is an ideal body weight, and it's based on things like my bone structure
yep.
and the way I gain muscle mass or lose it and that sort of thing. And for me, it's actually in that 150-poundish, low 150s range.
Yep.
So at my current body weight of about 162 this morning,
yep.
I'm actually a little heavy. But if I were going into something like powerlifting, I probably would be a little bit light for my body weight.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so it depends on what sport you're in. Now, back to that event where I was really exposed to the one-hand dumbbell swing.
Yep.
This is about dumbbells here. In training, I got up to a 65-pound dumbbell. And weighing, I don't know what I was, about the same weight I am now. And that would have put me in the 165-pound weight class, which is the way they do things there. So I wasn't too much concerned about that. And I figured because of centrifugal force with the dumbbell, like you see in a lot of the styles of kettlebell swings,
yep.
I figured a guy couldn't do more than half of his body weight. So with very little experience and nobody to teach me, I figured 65 pounds was pretty good. I'd go
yep.
in there and I'd do that. And so I watched some of the older guys do it, and I did some warm-ups, and the guy said, oh, no, no, put your hand here on the dumbbell, and actually position yourself this way when you do it,
mm-hmm.
and you can do a split for your receiving of the weight. I thought, oh, interesting, okay. So at 60 pounds, that's where I decided to start my lift.
Yep.
Are you hearing the train in the background there?
Yeah, I can hear that.
Yeah. We're right next to the train tracks at Atomic Athletic. And when I say right next to it, that train is about 30 feet from where I'm sitting in my office. So it can be loud. But so I started off at 60 pounds, and it was easy, much easier than what I did in training. So I jumped up to 70 pounds, and that was easy. So I had my third attempt, and I had done no research on what the records were.
Yeah.
But I figured I just did a 10-pound jump. It's a dumbbell lift. I'll do another 10-pound jump. It's my last attempt, and I'll see how I do with that. And I went over to the dumbbell rack, and this being the Ambridge VFW hall,
yep,
basement
yep.
gym, they had this old dumbbell rack that had some original Jackson cannonball-style dumbbells.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Yeah. And they had an 80-pounder there. So I said, 80 pounds, that's what I'm going to do. So I went and did it with no problem.
Mm-hmm.
And the guys were like, you know, Raj, why didn't you go heavier than that? And I said, because I just exceeded my personal record by 15 pounds in a dumbbell lift.
Mm-hmm.
I want to hurt myself. And they're like,
mm-hmm.
yeah, did you look up the records on this? I said, no. What's up? I said, we don't have them here, but we think that the record for your age group is like 85 pounds.
Wow.
And I said, oh, well, third attempt. And we don't know what the actual record is, so I'm not going to bother going for it. In the all-around association, you can do a fourth attempt for a record.
Mm-hmm.
But only if it's a record. But we didn't know what the record was, and there were two other lifts happening, and I had already done, I think, three or four lifts as demo lifts that I set records in.
Yep.
So I said, nah, I'm not going to bother. Well, as it turns out, I believe it would have been an 82.5-pound lift, and I would have had it.
Yep.
So, since then, I also found Mark Berry did a really fantastic piece in Physical Improvement Volume 2, which has not been reprinted by anybody to my knowledge, where he did a 4-page thing on the one-hand dumbbell swing when it was a American Barbell Men Weightlifting Association lift back in the 1930s or 20s. And I've modified my technique with that, and I regularly do 90 pounds now.
Nice.
Because, that 90 pounds keeps getting easier and easier. But I've been able to construct dumbbells in the warehouse gym that really take advantage of the rule system. And, I can do this because I've got a ton of different dumbbell parts, different collars. I've got bars that have the ends tapped, like a pro-style dumbbell, and you can use those with that lift. So, and you can back weight your dumbbells. So, being able to experiment with different shapes of dumbbells and different techniques has allowed me to, on a regular training basis, do a 90-pound lift, as I'm getting better and better. And according to my research, I think the guy weighed 169 pounds that had the world record back when that book was written. So it was probably written in 1929 because it came out, I think, in 31. So that guy weighing 169 pounds did, I believe, 173.25. For a one-hand dumbbell swing, which you wouldn't think would be possible because of the centrifugal force issue that you see with using many of the kettlebell techniques, but that's not the technique for a dumbbell. And by drilling down on this subject, I've been able to figure out, oh, the dumbbell lift, especially the competitive style dumbbell lift, is very different from any of the kettlebell swing exercises.
Hey, Raj, there is one question that I've been wanting to ask you, and we've gone through obviously all the finer points of this type of lift. And, you know, next week we're going to do a part two, obviously, because there's a ton of stuff we can get into about dumbbell sizes. Obviously, you have a number of DBs that you market, and I think that would be an interesting show. But let's get into this piece right here. Why don't you describe to everybody how you would perform this lift? Because I'm sure there's a lot of people that have never even heard of this or done it. And let's get into that. So tell everybody out in M&M how you would do this lift.
Okay. Start off with the dumbbell that you actually use. When I used that Jackson solid cast iron globe type 80-pound dumbbell, that's actually not the best shape dumbbell for hitting that lift. And this pertains to the technique that you use. You are allowed to, in the old American Barbell Men Weightlifting Association, you are actually allowed to use a leather forearm gauntlet, which Mark Berry recommends in his book, which I couldn't believe because I'm thinking, wow, I make those and sell those. I know exactly what he's talking about. And for training purposes, that's key. Now, you can't use that in the USAWA Weightlifting Association for competition, but there's no reason you shouldn't in training because it will save your forearm. Now, you can back weight the dumbbell. So what that means is one end of the dumbbell weighs more than the other end of the dumbbell. You can also start with that dumbbell sitting on end on the floor. You don't have to have both heads touching the ground, which is what I thought you had to do based on my Olympic lifting background. You would never start an Olympic lift without both ends of the barbell touching the ground, but you can with the dumbbell swing. Now, it's a one-handed deal. You can use a hook grip. So what you do is you have your heavy end on top. And what I do for my training is initially I used a tapped one-inch bar with a pro-style end plate screwed in on the bottom side, and I'd go with about 40% of the weight on the bottom and 60% on the top, and you jam your hand right up against the inside plate of the top end of the dumbbell. You position the dumbbell between your feet, and I do it more, if I'm doing a right-handed one, I do it more towards the right hand, so there's less torsion in my back.
Yep.
And you actually start it with a center of gravity behind the center of gravity of your body, which is forward of your heels. So when you lift, you're not actually doing a centrifugal force kind of lift, as an exercise would be. You want to start the swing off with your upward movement. So you're most strong, but because your hand is behind your center of gravity, in merely moving up, straight up against gravity, the swing starts on its own. And you can technically swing as many times as you want, but I only do two swings typically. I do my first one and then my second one and pop it up. And I do a split for receiving, but I don't do a split as if I were receiving a jerk. I actually do more of a step forward. So because it is a forward lift, those dumbbell plates can get quite big. You know, I'm up to using 25-pound and 35-pound plates on this dumbbell. So with it back weighted, it will actually carry through more. And I drop under it and step forward at the same time, lock it, and then put my feet together standing up, and the lift is complete, and you get the down signal. So, but it does have to start off touching the floor. So, it, you know, compared to the multiple swings that I was doing and being centered and forcing the centrifugal force issue, you know, there probably is something like a 50% body weight thing, just like when I was doing the throwing where the dumbbell would start to throw you kind of deal.
Yeah.
Now, forcing against gravity and going up more than out, I'm well over 50% of body weight, and the, you know, I'm not even close to that old record from the 1920s where, you know, 168 or 169-pound British guy did 173 and a quarter. So he did greater than body weight. So there's a lot of room in those records left, even the world record, for somebody who really studies the technique to hit this. And that is the technique on it. Now, in my training, I'm doing a lot of Indian club work. Because what I'm doing is really working that as an exercise for my entire shoulder, girdle, spine, grip, and forearm. But I'm also doing, you know, two-handed Olympic lifts. And I don't do just right hand. As many right hand ones as I do the same number left-handed. Now, here's an interesting thing. My left hand technique is not as good as my right because I'm a right-handed guy. But it's improving. My left hand grip and strength, I think, is better than my right hand.
Yeah, I can believe that.
Which is not unusual for most guys. So I expect my left-handed lift will ultimately be greater than my right. But this is the strength nerd aspect of it where, you know, I'm studying this stuff. And learning the biomechanics and learning what exercises make good supplementary exercises. And I'm doing my tendon and ligament strength training stuff with, you know, as I mentioned in an earlier podcast, right now I'm working without squat stands or a power rack, but I do have a chain lift bar. So I'm definitely doing partial movements.
Safety. One nice thing about doing these swings, too, just think of the balance aspect you get, because a lot of guys, they get big and they start to lose their balance. I've seen people when they walk, you know, just the way they carry themselves. Stuff like that's going to really build some balance into your structure for sure, because when you're swinging something with one arm, you know, you've got to be strong everywhere. You just can't, you know, relegate yourself to a few lifts and figure, okay, I'm all right, because you're not, because it'll catch up with you down the road. But one thing that, you know, we're going to get into, obviously we're getting near the end of the show, and there's a ton of stuff to hit. Next week, we will do another series. We could probably do multiple series of this rediscovering dumbbells. I mean, I want to, with Roger next week, we're going to hit upon, obviously, I love overhead with them. And, you know, we were talking about stacking plates, how you can stack them, obviously, on the front end. When you turn the dumbbell over, you got the big end on the shoulder. Away we go. Those are tricks that everybody's done. If you haven't, you ought to try it.
It's great for grip training, too.
Absolutely.
And but what, the types of collars that you use make a big difference with all that kind of thing. Those little Allen collars that I've got, I couldn't do that dumbbell swing style training without the Allen collars that I've got. It, you know, long, extra long dumbbell bars for experimenting with smaller size plates. That all makes a difference.
Makes a big difference. And not only that, when you're talking about collars, which definitely are your life there, because if you're messing around with anything, you definitely want a collar that's going to bite right into the steel itself. And one thing I'm very interested in, I love all the big, big dumbbells, and obviously Roger's got stuff, you know, you can load with shot. You know, obviously we've got plate loaders, we've got 1-inch, we've got 2-inch, you know, Thomas Inch, you know, we've got it all. And I think that would be a very interesting show next week to dive into. Let's get into the serious, serious dumbbells here. And, you know, stuff, you know, you were talking about you make, like me, you know, how to load it properly. What kind of collars to use? Do we want to use a long one, short one? If we want, if we don't have the money to purchase, you know, a pair, well, obviously you can go down to your local steel shop and we can get into that too. You know, they'll cut whatever you want. You might not have a nice middle handle there, but there's ways to solve that too. So, Raj, I think that would be an excellent show next week to really get into, because once again, you know, we're rediscovering dumbbells. So I think that would be something we could really have a lot of fun with.
Cool. Yeah. That's,
you know,
that's,
I mean, look, at dumbbells are something most people don't want to get into too much because, you know, everybody likes to use two arms, this, that, and the other thing. And, you know, it's like anything. It can expose weaknesses in you, and you know, people don't want anybody seeing that. But on the other hand, I mean, just think how good it would feel to take a 150-pound dumbbell with a 2-inch handle, clean it, and just blow it right up over your head. I mean, the grip alone. I mean, you know.
You know, T-Rex, Jeff Bankins, that's been on the show, for Christmas, his wife bought him a custom-painted globe style, actually custom handle even, globe style dumbbell from me that he uses for his shows now. And, you know, it's got an extra thick handle and it's got that globe shape, but it's shot loadable. So he's learning how to use the shot to help his lift, you know, where he is starting to backload things like that.
Sure.
And the, you know, I think with that piece he's done, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he's gone over 110 pounds now.
Yeah, I believe he's around there because he was telling me he's kind of getting back into doing some stuff with it now.
Yeah.
Because to be honest with you, he told me, I don't know if you saw the video I put up Saturday. It was hilarious. He contacts me again. And he goes, it was you and Roger that made me do this because I've, you know, I've shown him shots of the yard with all the stones. And sometimes I'll go out, you know, after I lift and, you know, I might have a row of stones from 60 to 150. And I'm using that basically as a little bit of end endurance after doing something monster, at least with one movement. And what he did the other day was really good. And I told him I admired him for this. He wasn't afraid to go out and put himself out because he didn't do really any warm-up. There he is out mowing the lawn, okay? So the picture I can paint for everybody is this. He's got a bunch of stones right up to 230 pounds, and he's got a keg that weighs over 160 he uses with no handles on it. So he says to me, you know, you guys kind of made me want to do this today, and I'm going to do it. So he's mowing the side, one side, and there's all the stones. So what he does, he parks his mower, and he lifts every stone right up to the keg and the 230, which at first he struggled with a little bit. I imagine he was a little tired. He looks like he's got some big property to mow there, but the man's tenacity got it, and he just put it down.
He lives in Louisiana too.
Yeah,
the heat and humidity there.
It was hot as hell because I mean when he talks into the camera, so his face looks like it's about a quarter of an inch in your face. So what he does now, he goes, well, now I got to move him to the other side. Now I'm going to do the heaviest down to the lightest. So he starts back in with the 230. He really doesn't have much problem. He puts that over and goes right down to, I don't know, he may have had like a 60, 70-pound stone. And it was like, what I really liked about it was this. Guy's sweaty, and you know he's tired, and, you know, we all know that. That stuff's not easy to hold when you're all wet. I don't care what size of stone keg you can get hurt. And what I really admire about Jeff was this. He decided he was going to do that no matter what, and he didn't care how he looked, and he really knew if he failed, he failed. He was going to give it his best shot. You won't see a lot of people do that because most people only want you to catch them doing their lifts when they're warmed up. Maybe they got tacky on. Maybe they're all chalked up, you know. So kudos to Jeff. That's all I can say. And I'm glad, you know, he's got that big dumbbell of yours. And, you know, I'm sure he's going to become very proficient with it. Right now, he's hooked on hip belt squats. And I've got a
good basic
video
exercise.
Of him. Oh, he loves it because he says his legs are getting strong as iron. Today, he dropped it like 4 inches down. And he did 300 for five, and beautiful. I mean, it's like anything with that. It takes forever to get it started. But he's getting it down more and more. He's using the arms to balance himself. And, you know, I can't say enough about him. He's a throwback, but it's a good way. I mean, you can learn an awful lot from a guy like that who's got that determination. So we'll get into that dumbbell that Jeff purchased from you and all the other stuff because, I mean – we've got an awful lot to go over, but you know, today was good. You know, we got the one arm swing in, and obviously we got a lot of history from you. So Raj, before we depart, why don't you give everybody, unless you've got anything to add, you know, give everybody your information. Obviously, you know how we do this.
I write up literally pages of notes before these things. Yep. I've got books sitting here. I've got a fantastic old, cabinet card sitting here that we didn't even get into. Cabinet card's 120 years old. Just it's some awesome stuff, but I think I've probably got enough here for the next show, too.
Well, you know, so, I'm thinking, too, you know, maybe we're going to do some stuff down the road where you and I will do some audio discs of stuff, whether we take and put together a number of shows, or if we're going to concentrate on a few shows here with dumbbell work and, you know, where you can get the material and such as that. And obviously I want to get into, you know, we still got a number of shows. I'd like to get back into the rack maybe after we're done with this with some more ligament and tendon training.
But
obviously
that, cabinet card I'm talking about, we'll get right into that.
So, I mean, there's an awful lot of stuff here we can really touch on. You know, routines are big, you know, so there might be some stuff that we're going to be doing maybe in the next 6 months because, you know, we do a show every week. That's four shows a month. And if I can get all this other stuff, material working with some guests where we can all hook up with Skype, you know, we might even do another show. Obviously, it's all going to relate to everybody's time, too, and what day, you know, we could plug this thing in. So why don't you give everybody all your pertinent information, and I'll give mine, and we'll say goodbye for the day.
Sounds good. I'm Roger LaPointe. The company is Atomic Athletic, and you can find us at atomicathletic.com. That's AtomicAthletic.com. We've got the blog on the upper right of the screen. It's just one of the choices that you can make there on the front page. And then we've got the Atomic Athletic Bombproof Bulletin, which is my free email newsletter, on the lower left of the screen. Some of the blog stuff is the same as the newsletter. Some of it isn't. Some of the newsletters never make it onto that. And we've And then on the site, we sell equipment and information. So,
and you got a lot of it, so I would suggest everybody get out there and take a peek at it because, you know, information is, for a lot of people, they charge big dollars. Yeah. And, you know, I can see some of that to a point, but, you know, something, the idea with all this stuff is to help people, and I think if you treat people right, they're going to come back to you and, you know, who knows what you can get into with them. As far as we're concerned, this is Motivation and Muscle, the podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. FiorelloBarbellCo.com is the sponsor of this show, and we are on Facebook. We are on Twitter at Fiorello. It's Fiorello Eric, FIORILLOERIC. You can reach us at Fiorello Barbell at NYCAP, that's NYCAP.RR.com. Big announcements for sure now. We're going to have our final meeting, at least as far as execution goes. We've got two big things, well, really three. We are creating the Fiorello Barbell Company broadcast company, basically, and this is going to entail Motivation and Muscle, which is our primary podcast, of course. Roger and I are going to be doing a show every Tuesday. It's going to be called Silent Strength. This is a show that's dedicated to my chiropractor for a number of years, John Ridge, who was more than a friend. He was a mentor, and he was very behind me all the way through this dream I've got of this business. And he used to always call me that. I never knew that, basically, until he went away and sent a postcard with a big tiger on it. And he said, "That's what you remind me of." And so in John's honor, Roger and I have talked about it, and we're both good with it. And we are going to have a show starting Tuesdays, which will be called Silent Strength, and obviously it will address everything we've talked about right up to this point and some, and that's being worked on right now. We are building a big separate piece off of Fiorello Barbell Company, and then obviously we've been talking about it forever, but it's finally going now, and it will be live, I hope, at the latest by the end of this month. We have a weight loss product coming out that I think everyone's going to enjoy. It's not the typical stuff you've seen. It's called The Weight Is Over Fast. It was done with a gentleman here, Dennis Eames. He lost 43 pounds in 6 months. But the amount of material and the things we've created to go along with this product are going to be, I have never seen anything out there like this. We're talking to people, basically, and it goes for anybody. But there's an awful lot of people that got to work for a living. They don't have 2 hours to lift. Some people don't want to go to gyms. We've created a big three here that, in my opinion, executed properly. Not hard on the joints, especially if you have a weight problem. Very easy on the tendons and ligaments. And as I said to Roger during the show here, I've had people here where I say, don't worry so much about the weight. Look at what's going on with you, whether you're losing an inch or 2 inches on your waist. You know, clothes are changing, habits are changing, life is changing. You're transforming now into something new and something that will definitely make a major, major change in your life, both mentally and physically. So that's going to be coming out. We've got a bunch of other stuff on the table, but we're going to stick with that right now. So, Motivation and Muscle is going to just keep getting bigger and bigger. I love doing podcasting. I've got great people on. We've got about 4 or 5 shows right now that are sitting there ready to go. And like I told Roger, I've been so busy with it. I've got 5 people right now that want to be on the show. I haven't even pushed for the other ones that really have been contacting me too, because it's just time right now, and it's a good thing. So, Raj, thanks for being on the show and the supporter, obviously. And we're going to talk to you next week, obviously.
Sounds good, Eric. Thanks a lot.
All right. You're welcome. Anytime. So for Roger LaPointe, this is Eric Fiorello. Remember, Motivation and Muscle, you can get a hold of us, obviously, on the website, through our email. There is a phone number, contact number that will come directly to me. And check Roger's site out. And, you know, if you do call Roger, I guarantee you'll get time with him. So have a good week. And Roger and I will talk to you next week with basically we are going to call the show Silent Strength. So have a good afternoon. Take care.
Thanks so much for listening to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connected your brain to your brawn. We'll see you next time.